Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
While the long-anticipated recession still lies ahead of us, the fact remains that the U.S. economy is anemic and getting weaker. Therefore, it is imperative to be aware of the reasons why those predicting any sort of economic rebound should be extremely disappointed, and instead should be preparing for the inevitable collapse of asset prices and negative GDP growth, while at the same time understand how to profit in the current macroeconomic conditions. In the meantime, the following are the reasons why the soft landing narrative has a very low, if not nil, probability of materializing. History proves an economy that is saddled with an enormous amount of debt cannot exhibit strong growth. The ratio of U.S. total non-financial debt to GDP is at a record high level. As of Q1 2024, the amount of total non-financial debt to GDP was 260%. To put this tremendous figure into perspective, the ratio was 240% in the Great Recession of 2008. And this crucial ratio was at a significantly lower level of 185% of GDP at the start of the NASDAQ implosion during 2000. The simple truth is that the total amount of government, corporate, business, and household debt as a percentage of the underlying economy has never been worse. The Index of Leading Economic Indicators is predicting GDP growth that has a 0% handle in the current quarter and growth of just 1% during Q4. Even though that anemic pace of growth does not equate to a recession, it is a GDP increase that will be far insufficient to produce the 15% earnings per share growth for S&P 500 corporations predicted for the current year. The yield curve has been inverted for the longest duration in history. This indicator has been a near-perfect recession predictor since 1955. The one exception occurred back in 1965. There was no recession back then, but GDP growth absolutely plummeted from 10% to 0.2%. And the stock market fell by 20%. So that really doesn't count as an exception to the rule. Investors can ignore this indicator at their peril. The level of real Fed funds rate has been in positive territory for over a year. History shows that when the Fed funds rate is greater than CPI, a recession usually ensues as asset prices tumble. The Fed's balance sheet is shrinking. Mr. Powell has overseen a decrease of $2 trillion worth of Fed assets over the course of the past 2 years. Previous attempts to reduce the base money supply have ended in the seizing up of money markets and produced an air pocket in stock prices. While many in the mainstream financial media love to extol the virtues of a consumer who has a rather healthy balance sheet, what they fail to realize is that inflation has already wiped out their purchasing power and standard of living. Therefore, while it is true that the household debt to GDP is 73% as of its latest reading, which is down from 98% at its peak in 2007, but for reference, still up from 69% in 2000, what you also must take into context is the ravaging effects of inflation. In other words, whereas debt service payments have fallen from 13.2% of disposable income from the peak during Q4 2007 to 9.7% today, inflation has eviscerated the balance of disposable income for most of the middle class. Consumers have a cash flow problem regardless of their inflated balance sheets, which have been exaggerated by ephemeral asset bubbles. Banks' lending standards have tightened, and therefore the fuel behind consumption, new credit creation, is waning. A great example of this dynamic is new mortgage demand. Lending to the housing sector is 9% lower now than it was a year ago. The reasons are clear. Consumers are stretched and real estate prices are at a record high. When the net percentage of banks that are tightening lending standards have increased in past cycles, recessions have usually been the result. It is also crucial to recognize that we have, for the first time in history, three asset bubbles existing concurrently in equities, real estate, and credit. Hence, the economic foundation has never been more fragile. Of course, the Fed is aware of these facts and has already indicated that it is ready to ride to the rescue once again. Mr. Powell said last week that the time has come to start cutting interest rates. This is even though inflation is rising faster than his asinine and insane 2% target, and from a price level that has already severely injured the middle class. Nevertheless, Wall Street is loudly banging the economic soft landing drum and promulgating a new equity rally that will take stocks further into record valuation territory. However, history gives us a bit of pause on that cacophonous drumbeat. The Fed started cutting interest rates in December of 2000. 3 months later, a recession ensued. And by the time it was over, the S&P 500 lost 50% of its value and the NASDAQ plunged by 80%. Fast forward a few years later, and we find that the Fed started cutting rates in July of 2007 after it managed to sniff out some trouble in the housing market, which we were told at the time would end up being a non-event that is totally contained within a relatively few subprime mortgages. But just 6 months later, the global financial crisis began, where the S&P 500 would once again lose half of its value and home prices took a 33% drubbing. The IDEC model has us squarely in the disinflation camp and on high alert for the deflationary recession to begin. And no, history proves that just because the Fed starts to cut rates, that does not lead to a panacea. The yield curve is just about to steepen back into positive territory, and that has usually meant a recession should begin within 3 to 6 months from now. The reason behind a recession obsession is because that is when equities plunge by 35% or more. Let's end with this bit of information. According to data compiled by my friend John Rubino, the value of stocks, homes, and oil have gone nowhere when pricing those assets in terms of gold. And even GDP is lower today than it was when Nixon broke the gold window in 1971 in terms of AU, which was no longer artificially pegged to a government fixed price. In other words, when using an accurate measurement of the dollar's depreciation debacle, as only gold can do, the organic increase of asset prices and GDP growth look far less impressive. In truth, oil, equities, real estate, and the economy have at best merely managed to keep pace with the actual rate of inflation over the past 53 years, not the massaged CPI figure published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The illusion of appreciation comes from a depreciating dollar, which is backed primarily by the Fed's printing press. As Mr. Rubino puts it himself, what a difference a single policy decision can make. Had the U.S. just gotten its act together in the 1970s and maintained sound money, today we'd be buying stocks for their 2% dividend yield rather than betting our life savings on never-ending boom-bust cycles. And more important, our kids would be living in affordable houses. We'd have no trouble filling the gas tank to go to work. And the aristocracy wouldn't be feasting on the peasants and shredding the fabric of society. To that, I say, amen.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Reality Check. 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you are not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.